Coming up on Tech News Today, Twitter tries to make up with developers. iOS 7 delayed, but the iPhone's not. And Baidu making its own glasses just like Google. Plus some bad news for LucasArts. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, April 3rd, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPad, Samsung Galaxy, and other smartphones are worth at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakta.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show we keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, starting each time with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feed. Reuters reports Google will launch a new version of the Nexus 7 tablet in July. Asus Tech would continue to make the tablet, but a Qualcomm Snapdragon processor would replace NVIDIA's Tegra 3 due to power concerns. The new model will also reportedly get a higher screen resolution and a thinner bezel. Google hasn't decided on a price, but Reuters sources say they're considering leaving it at $199 or possibly even dropping it to $149. So still in the bargain section.
Who's ready for some Apple rumors? I'm going to give them to you whether you want them or not. The company is pulling engineers off of OS 10 10.9 in order to make sure that iOS 7 ships on time, or so sources are telling Daring Fireball's John Gruber. Current iOS engineers with off-campus carry privileges are having to use a polarizing screen filter to make it difficult for the great unwashed, those are my words, to see iOS's rather significant system-wide UI overhaul, says these sources. iMore's Renee Ritchie also reports that Johnny Ive's new involvement in iOS is, quote, apparently making many people really happy, but will also apparently make rich texture-loving designers sad.
Oh, no. No more, like, leather-like things on my calendar. Yes. Twitter demoed some new card types for developers. Soon, you'll see a lot more data in Twitter cards, including links to mobile apps from partners like Foursquare and Etsy. Additionally, developers will be able to add images, video players, and product data to tweets. The new style of cards will go live starting tomorrow.
The FTC put a bounty on killing robocalls, and the bounty hunters have arrived. The FTC robocall challenge kicked off in October, and it carries a $50,000 prize that has now been split between Sardar Danis and Aaron Foss. Their proposals would place numbers on a blacklist and whitelist and incorporate a CAPTCHA-style test to prevent illegal calls from ringing through. Danis's plan requires an app or a device, while Foss's would use a cloud-based system. Google's Daniel Klein and Dean Jackson won the Robocall Technology Achievement Award with an algorithm approach, kind of like anti-spam. That award was for companies with more than 10 people and awarded no cash prize.
China's biggest search engine, Baidu, is working on its own version of Google's Project Glass called Baidu Eye, according to news site Sina.com, or Sina, S-I-N-A. The device has an LCD display, voice-controlled image recognition, and bone sensing. Sounds a lot like the voice control functions on Google Glass eyewear. Baidu Eye folks can make phone calls, search the web, and use gestures to take and send photos, according to the report. The device will apparently also have an open platform for developers.
Storage nerds, start drooling. Seagate is now shipping the world's first 4-terabyte hard drive. The drive spins at 7,200 RPM, has 64 megabytes of cache, and uses 4 1-terabyte platters. It's going to cost somewhere in the neighborhood of around $200. I think I'm going to start ripping my Blu-rays right now.
Several people noticed over the past few days that pages from iTunes web servers weren't showing up in Google's search, and Google has confirmed the issue, says it's a technical problem they're working with Apple to solve. Matt Cutts, the head of Google's web spam team, said on Twitter that Apple servers were giving 403 forbidden errors when Google tried to access some of the pages.
Vodafone shares fell from a five-year high after Verizon said it is in fact not considering a joint bid with AT&T to buy the UK carrier. Specifically, Verizon says it won't merge with or make an offer for Vodafone, whether alone or in conjunction with others. Verizon says it is interested in buying that 45% stake Vodafone has in the U.S. mobile venture Verizon Wireless, but that's all it is, just interest.
Not that kind of interest. Looks like Valve is getting ever closer to launching its Steam Box. Are you excited? Linux site Phoronix reported that new software packages on the steampowered.com web server now contain experimental NVIDIA Linux graphic drivers, a Plymouth boot splash screen for Steam, and Valve wallpapers. Phoronix speculates the Steam Box will run a version of Ubuntu, though it could be a customized distro similar to what Mint does with Ubuntu.
There's a new proposal in California that's backed by the ACLU of Northern California, the EFF, and others. It's called the Right to Know Act, and it aims to bring transparency to data exchanges. Upon a user request, a company would have to give a user access to the data it is collected about that user. The company would also have to disclose a list of companies it has exchanged that data with. If you're in California and want to support the bill, the EFF has a form you can fill out so you can send an email to your local lawmakers.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPad, your Samsung, your Samsung Galaxy smartphone is worth right now, and you can get cash in your pocket super easy. Do you want that new iPhone, that new Samsung Galaxy S4, one of those HTC One or one of the other HTC phones, maybe a BlackBerry? Before you get your new phone, or if you already upgraded to the next big thing, make sure you sell your used phone to Gazelle. The easiest way to get cash. Don't give it away. Don't bury it in last year's gadget in a drawer. Find out what it's worth at Gazelle and lock in the quote. It's risk-free. Even if you're not sure if you want to sell it, go to gazelle.com, type in G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com, tell Gazelle the condition. And be honest, they're going to check it, and they even buy broken iPhones and iPads, so there's no real harm in telling them what it's really worth or what it's really like. And then you'll get your risk-free offer. They'll tell you what it's worth. They lock in that quote for 30 days. So you have 30 days to decide when you're going to send it. You can go get your new phone and set it up, and you'll get paid fast by check or PayPal after they get your device. It's risk-free. It's trustworthy. It's easy. What's your iPhone, your iPad, or your Android smartphone worth? Take a minute. Go to gazelle.com to find out. Sell your used iPhone or Samsung Galaxy smartphone today at gazelle.com. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. We really do. Joining us now to discuss the stories of the day, Tim Stevens, editor-in-chief of Engadget. Tim, I know you're a little under the weather, so as always, I appreciate you being on the show, but extra so today.
Thank you for having me, Tom. Always happy to be here, even if I am feeling a little sick.
You look great, though.
Well, thank you.
let's start by talking about Twitter and their no press allowed. We're going to try to kiss up to the developers meeting. What's going on there, IS?
Yeah, so Twitter, they showed off some new tech in its cards interface. If you don't know what that cards interface is, if you ever see an embedded tweet or you look at the mobile versions of Twitter and you see this card layout, that's what a Twitter card is. Twitter cards will be able to show a lot more information. There's mobile app links, photo galleries, product information. So if you saw a cross post from Path to Twitter, you would see a new link, get the Path app link on the bottom of the Twitter card. And that app link is only going to show up on Android and iOS. It's not going to be on the mobile web, and it's not going to be on Twitter, its actual website. First partners include Foursquare, SoundCloud, Etsy, and Flickr. Like I said, there are a number of new cards. There's photo galleries. In an example from Boston.com, you saw four images up. You saw a title, a caption, snippet of information. There's also special approval required for app cards, product cards, and player cards. There's a video player feature that if a developer wants, they can actually allow people in the cards to look at videos directly. So you need special approval. You're not going to necessarily get spammed there. Tim, you know, the text is still limited to 140 characters, but looking at something like the product card, which is a partnership with Etsy, you see a bunch of information there. How much information is too much for a simple tweet?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy to me that they're still holding on to this 140 character restriction, but now we can get videos embedded in there as well. I mean, obviously, you can say a lot more than 140 characters with the stuff in a video. But, you know, as a property that has a lot of apps, I'm pretty excited about this because this means we can really share some rich stuff. You know, I can't wait to have our developers dig into this and see what we can do to have apps like Distro on our end. You know, it's hard to share some content in apps on Twitter at this point, specifically if you want deep linking within apps, which this will support. So I'm really excited to see what this can do, and I think it's a great rollout. But yeah, this really sort of changed the nature of Twitter being these short text byte updates of information.
Sarah, I'm looking at this, and when Twitter rolled out first, it was called a microblogging platform. Isn't this pushing further and further into basically blogging for particular developers and partners?
I guess you could think of it that way. I mean, I think Twitter knows that, you know, using Path as an example, up until now, if somebody shares something on Path and then they decide to cross post to Twitter, often it goes to sort of a static page. And if you're, not on a mobile device or whatever, you're kind of at the end of the line. So it's sort of like there's a bit of a disjointed experience, right? So if there are cards that can actually send me back to an app and help me download it and are showing up in the right place when I'm on a mobile device and are smart enough to know how that works, I think that's great. I think that's great for Twitter. Twitter is obviously a funnel of a lot of different services. And this just makes it work better.
Tom, what do you think the developers are going to make of this? I mean, Twitter's had some interesting policies when it comes to developers. They're basically asking a bunch to build into Twitter a lot more. Is this something you think developers are going to get behind?
Yeah, I think developers will be excited about it. I'm not so sure about users. It feels like it might be a little bit of a kludge. I'm a little confused by what I'll be able to do without getting special approval and what I have to be a partner, a developer partner, to be able to do. And I'm not sure what my benefit is other than products and brands can now give me richer posts. And it feels like it might clutter things up. It feels like they're taking sort of a separate service, this kind of card service, which might be a cool thing on its own, and forcing it into Twitter. It may work out to be just great. It may be totally elegant, and I'll look at it and say, oh, no, that's not obtrusive at all. It just adds flavor. It's just like having photos or videos embedded now, except better. I'm hoping that's how I react, but I'm skeptical because right now I like Twitter the way it works, and this seems like just it might end up, like I say, cluttering things up.
I think the other thing is it's going to bring a lot of developers in the fact that if you have this link and you have this unknown application, you'll have this access to either open it in that application. The example was showing in the video, like Flickr application. You can open it in the Flickr app or you could install an application just from this card. I'm just really intrigued about the way these things are being embedded on the web and mobile. It just seems like when you click on one of these little posts and they expand to fill your entire screen, it's starting to feel a lot more like just, I don't know, a regular website, a blog. It's starting to have so much more functionality than Twitter originally had. I'm intrigued for it as a content producer myself, but I just don't know how people are going to take to this. And here's the example of the product card right now that Jason's showing. You can see that this is from Etsy, and there's a lot of data here. You see the actual image, you see the pricing, a description, a link, and there's just so much more than used to just be there. I'm just wondering if people are going to take to that because that's just much more data than 140 characters.
And I also wonder if as a user you'll be able to filter this stuff out so that you don't get this full presentation all the time of all this information. If you just want to see text in Twitter, will you still be able to? Will you have to click through to see that stuff or will it show up in your feed? Yeah, that could definitely get someone annoying.
I just realized that could probably make Twitter a bunch of money, that if a sponsored link could be expanded all the time when you're mm-hmm. flicking through, that you probably could see a lot of these things out there.
It also really
goes back to money.
It also really, you know, this is just one more reason that Twitter wants to kill, you know, a service like Tweetbot, which I use via mobile, which obviously is not going to, you know, incorporate the same kind of experience that the official Twitter app has. They really want to make sure that we're using official apps at this point, especially when they're putting so much thought and effort into the experience being richer.
All right, a sudden upwelling has occurred over the last couple of days. A lot of reputable bloggers and usually accurate Apple rumor mongers out there saying things. What are we hearing, Sarah?
Well, we're hearing quite a bit. There were a couple months that went by where things were kind of quiet around the Apple rumor mill. So we're getting back into it. Apple Insider has obtained a research note from analyst Brian White. He works at Topeka Capital Markets. He wrote this note to investors. Says he thinks both the iPhone 5S, that's what we're calling the next iteration of the iPhone, and the iWatch, which, you know, is still a mythical unicorn at this point, will include fingerprint identification technology. He says this after meeting with a component supplier in a tour over in China and Taiwan. That's not so weird because, of course, Apple acquired the company Authentic last year, paid about $356 million, and that company makes a smart sensor that could be embedded under a fingerprint reader, underneath a touchscreen display, maybe a home button type of a thing. In any case, obviously, Apple bought Authentic for technology in some form. Also, if we are to believe that, you know, maybe we can unlock the phone via fingerprints, it could be used for other what they call essential security purposes, maybe like credit card payments, passbook integration. It could possibly replace the need to enter a password when you're downloading something from the App Store, let's say. And it could really be the selling point of the 5S. You know, the 4S was sort of like it was a littler step up from the iPhone 4. I think, you know, the last big kind of selling point for the iPhone was Siri. You know, that was the big thing in 2011. So, hey, fingerprints, that could be it. And he says he thinks that this 5S is going to arrive in July. Also mentioned a possible iRing that would be worn on a user's finger that could aid in detecting motion controls on an Apple TV. That was very interesting. An iRing. Haven't heard that one before. And then, of course, in the iOS world, we hear, as I mentioned in the news views, that iOS 7 is running behind. Although, if you talk to any engineer at Apple, that's the par for course. Anytime a new version of anything is close to getting pushed out, they're usually running behind. But that there is a possible system-wide UI overhaul for iOS 7. So, and we were just talking about this yesterday. What's next? You know, what's next for the home screen of grids of square apps? Tim, I know that you were sort of in on some of the conversation with the Apple folks yesterday on a branch thread. What do you make of this?
Yeah, it's interesting to see so many stories kind of spawning as a branch thread. Actually, it's the first time I've seen, you know, one that's quite as fruitful as this. But yeah, it's a lot of interesting speculation for sure. And certainly, you know, there is a lot of anticipation for the iPhone 5S, but a lot of people are also worried that the 5S is going to be received much like the 4S was before. And having fingerprint authentication would certainly be a nice new feature added in there. And it has been just about a year since they acquired Authentic. So that's, you know, about the right amount of time that they would need to be integrating something like that into the hardware. But yeah, I mean, in terms of timing and that sort of thing, it's hard to predict at this point. It used to be that Apple was on a pretty regular release schedule for their hardware. But things have been changing a lot lately, so it's a little bit hard to know. We do have WWDC coming up here in June, and I think it's a pretty safe bet that we'll see iOS 7 in some shape or another unveiled then, whether it'll be shipping then or it'll shipping a few months later because of delays, that remains to be seen. And what exactly it'll look like, too, is a bit of a question mark at this point, too, with Johnny Ive coming on, of course, and taking things over there. We're expecting a lot of changes. And yeah, I think we probably will see some flatter textures, as we're alluded to in that branch conversation. But at this point, in terms of functionality, that's a big question mark in my mind.
Ayaz, what do you think about the fingerprint tech? Is that enough of a selling point for people to have renewed interest in iPhones if they don't have them already?
I don't know if it's going to bring a new interest into it. I mean, biometrics has been around for a really long time. ThinkPads have had them for a number of years. Apple laptops haven't bothered to include biometrics as an authentication element. But I would think since Apple is getting into the business side and trying to get people back or to keep, this is an odd thing, to keep iPhone users there, to have the security function as a biometric authentication, that seems really interesting to me because we keep seeing these reports of how to bypass that lock screen. With every iteration of iOS, there's been this bizarre hack that you could do if you do some swipes or you remove the SIM card in the middle of it. If you can introduce an element, a physical element, that makes it a little bit more difficult to bypass a lock screen, to have more security, Apple could then be standing pretty on this concept of, look, we're really secure. We have something that nobody else does, and they could be winning away government contracts and business contracts they probably wouldn't be able to get otherwise.
Well, just because they have a fingerprint sensor doesn't mean that it's not hackable. I mean, those hacks that work on the lock screen could conceivably still work on fingerprint sensor. But I think this is a great thing for user convenience. I would love to be able to just put my thumb on the phone and have it unlock automatically. That's so much easier than typing in those four characters every time you have to unlock the phone. So for ease of use, if nothing else, I think this is great, and I think it's believable. And Sarah, I think you nailed it. Like, they always have delays on iOS. Apple always puts stuff out when they think it's done. So this is nothing new. But the idea of a system-wide UI overhaul, it's kind of overdue at this point. So I'm happy to hear that, if it's true. Let's move on to talking about Baidu AI. Now, you may have heard this on April 1st. You may have assumed, as most people did, that it was an April Fool's joke. Baidu, of course, the top Chinese search engine. And the report was that they were working on a similar thing to Google Glass, their own set of glasses. LCD display, voice-controlled image recognition, bone sensing technology, could make phone calls, search the web, take and store photos. Well, it turns out Baidu says, yeah, we are working on something like that. Baidu AI, according to Tencent Tech and Sina.com, is real. And Baidu has reached out to several outlets, including Engadget. Tim Kaiser quote told Engadget that we really are developing something similar in its basic functionality to what was described in the Sina Tech report and other sources in the press. The reports were correct in their essentials, though they got some of the details wrong. And they say, look, we don't know if it'll ever become a product. It's just something we're researching. Interesting that Baidu is working on this. Great to see somebody else kind of maybe coming with a competitive product eventually. Also interesting that they would come out and confirm it and say, look, you know, it's total research. We just want to say, yeah, we are working on that. Why do you think they did that, Tim?
Well, the timing, of course, was very interesting. As you mentioned, it kind of came out on April 1st, and we weren't really sure about it. And that's why Richard Lai, our editor-in-chief of Engadget Chinese, reached out and got the confirmation. You know, I think as search is moving to mobile devices and as people are using their mobile devices for more and more of their computing, ultimately Baidu needs to be getting ahead of this. And Google is certainly, you know, leading the way with Google Glass. And I think Baidu sees that they need to be there too. The interesting thing for me is that this isn't really, you know, a formal product. And ultimately they think it'll be a suite of products that'll include necklaces and rings and other things that, you know, are wearable that you can do searches through. And I think that the future is bright for wearable devices. This one in particular, I think, looks a little bit clunky. As you can see, it's kind of a big thing with a big earpiece. But, you know, you can envision a more streamlined version of this. You can also envision, you know, different wearable devices, indeed wristwatches and that kind of thing that you could do your searching through. And ultimately, you know, something that Baidu needs to do, whether or not they're going to lead the market, as we think Google probably will this year, that remains to be seen. I think probably they'll be following. But being a fast follower doesn't hurt when you're, you know, making way into a new market like this.
Yeah, it certainly has worked in the past for lots of phone and tablet makers called Apple. What is it with rings? Sarah, do you want a ring from Baidu to go with your Apple ring?
I mean, the ring thing came out of nowhere, right? It's like, okay, everybody's doing
the
glasses.
Apple ring thing from like really uncreditable sources before. So I'd never believed it until now.
I don't know. I mean, it's like what's next? Ankle rings? You know, okay, so we've got glasses, we've got watches, we've got possible rings. I mean, I guess actually the idea of a ring makes the most sense because, you know, if it's going to be part of gesture-based technology, it's maybe the least obtrusive thing that you could wear, but I don't know. I mean, rings are, the sizes are really important. And, you know, you can have a watch that has, you know, a variety of different sizes and that's okay. But then when you're getting into like a ring area, I don't know. I and then it's got to look good because then other people might have jewelry. It's all very complicated to me. I'm intrigued. But it seems a little silly.
Ayaz, you want to wear your computer?
I do actually want to wear my computer. I like the idea of Google Glass, even though I can never say it properly. Still drives me crazy. But thank you for naming it that. Whatever these things are, I would love to be able to have access to information wherever I go. I think what's going on with the rings ideas, the watches, the things on your face, all these different versions, I don't think there's one particular form factor that's going to work for everybody. I think that if you're going to try this wearable computing thing, you have to try it on every single front. There might be somebody who wants to wear a ring. There might be somebody who wants to wear something on their wrist, maybe around their neck or as their glasses. I just think that this is a very new thing that can actually happen. I mean, we've seen this stuff in science fiction, but for it to actually become a reality, there has to be a number of different things. I think the company that probably do the best job, Samsung. Because they make everything in every size anyway. So why not make watches, rings, and necklaces, and glasses? They're probably going to do this. Actually, I think they are working on watches.
And they'll sing us a little song.
Yeah, Samsung's actually... they already made some smartwatches. I think back in 1999, they had a smartwatch that they made. So for them, it's kind of old hat. But yeah, I think we're definitely at the point where everyone's throwing everything at the wall and waiting to see what sticks.
Throwing everything at your body,
spaghetti computers.
And seeing what you wear.
You just throw them against the wall and they stick.
Al dente delicious.
Let's return to the past now for a moment and show how old storage media don't always become obsolete, even when you think they're going to. Amazon launching a new service for vinyl lovers.
Yeah, that's right. You know, this was sort of my, like, isn't April 1st over type of a thing when I first read the headline, auto rip for vinyl. Yes, Amazon is offering auto rip for vinyl records that are purchased on Amazon. And it goes back to anything that you purchased in 1998 up until the present and future purposes. And, you know, this is something that's similar to auto rip for CDs. We talked about that. That was introduced by Amazon earlier in the year. But it appeals to vinyl lovers as well. Copies can be streamed or downloaded as MP3s from Amazon's Cloud Player, which conveniently is on iOS and Android and the Kindle Fire. Steve Boom, who's the head of digital music at Amazon, says, you know, if you're wondering, why are they doing this? Many of our music customers are vinyl fans, and it's traditionally been very difficult to make digital versions of vinyl records. Now customers can enjoy the albums they buy wherever they are and not when they just have access to a record player. Now, I, again, was like, who is this really going to apply to? And it turns out that vinyl sales are on the rise, people. This is not just some niche thing that a few people are going to enjoy. In fact, Nielsen SoundScan is reporting that sales of vinyl LPs in 2012 were at 4.6 million units, which is up from 3.9 million in 2011, which was up from 2.8 million in 2010. So this is actually a facet of music lovers that is growing, not shrinking. And I think really what it says is Amazon says, hey, listen, you know, this is a service that we can offer people. People can buy records on Amazon, and then they can just enjoy those records when they don't have access to vinyl. Indie record stores are just have, you know, one more reason to shut down, because someone like me who has a record player and some records, it is, you know, even though vinyl is fun and throwbacky and, you know, sort of like the yesteryear, and some people think that vinyl actually has the best sound, you know, of everything, it is a little bit clunky. You know, you kind of have to like hang out near a record player and flip them over, and there's a lot of work that goes into enjoying vinyl. So for me to be able to have a digital copy every time I buy vinyl off Amazon, that's awesome. Tim, are you a vinyl fan? Is this something that you would take advantage of?
I'm not personally a vinyl fan, but I definitely know people who will go out and buy vinyl just because they want something tactile, you know, something with big, beautiful album arts, and something, of course, that sounds like vinyl does. And then they'll go out and buy the CD, or they'll go out and buy the MP3 as well. So, you know, this kind of takes care of both things in one shot, which is great. I also love that we're kind of finally getting back to the MP3.com days of the late 90s. You know, 15 years later, we can now finally get digital versions of the things that we buy physically, just like we could back in the late 90s. So it's the way of the future in the past.
Yeah, maybe the Concorde jet will come back now, too. In some ways, we lived so much better in the 20th century than we do now.
We've got space travel coming up, right? That's being privatized, so I guess we might get there. I love this idea because you have that warm sound of vinyl. That's what people say it has. And the thing is, for convenience, you have these mobile versions, MP3s, that obviously will sound very different. You can, if you wanted to, take your vinyl and actually run it through a converter and put it into your machine and record that if you wanted to. But who wants to do that? So I love this idea. I wish Amazon would just do this with books, because I would love to buy
I've taken a few of my records and put them and digitized them, put them in my library, and I have no end of problems with those MP3s because, for instance, iCloud is like, we don't know what that is, can't match it, can't upload it. You're not allowed to upload that. It's just weird. And so I love this idea of being able, in fact, I would definitely not buy another CD in my life, probably anyway, but definitely not now, because if I did feel I wanted some kind of physical version of this, I would love to have vinyl. I have a big shelf, like 300 vinyl records already here. So this is really cool. I love this.
They're going to sell more bookcases that are full of vinyl records, because we're all going to start buying vinyl again because they look so cool all, you know, up there on the wall. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I
bookcase
I think,
market.
It's going to be a big boom for the bookshelf makers. You're absolutely right. All right. Any other thoughts on vinyl before we move on to retail? It's weird.
Vinyl's cool.
Yeah. Well, we are going to need more retail space. You may think that MP3s killed vinyl. Well, obviously not. You may think that online shopping is killing the need for buildings. It's not. Wired article by Marcus Wolson today talks about how in Europe, retailers are going to need 25 million square meters of space additional to what they already have over the next 5 years. This, according to real estate researcher Jones Lang LaSalle, that's seven Central Parks worth of additional retail space to serve online shopping. In UK, online makes up about 12% of all shopping. It's about half that in the US, but both of them are growing by leaps and bounds. And they need lots of new structures. They need mega warehouses to handle all of that back end of inventory that they're going to deliver. They're talking about needing smaller warehouses closer to cities because everybody's after that same day delivery service that they'd like to provide. Shipping services, your UPS, your FedEx, they all need more room to handle the goods in transit, to sort the things and get them on trucks and all of that sort of thing. And there's click and collect locations expanding all over the place. Amazon has that. Walmart has that. That locker system where you order something, it shows up at a locker and you can pick it up that way if you don't have a great option for having something delivered to your house. They're going to need return desks. They're going to need showrooms. So this just made me wonder, in the next 10 years or so, how is this going to change shopping? I think everybody thought, brick and mortar will just start to go away, except in a few cases, and we'll just do all our shopping online. But it looks like there will be more hybrids, warehouse stores, and things like that. Sarah, do you have a guess as to how this is going to all shake out?
I think the whole same day delivery thing is, that's a key point of this, right? Is if you've got some sort of a mega distribution center / warehouse, it's got to be in somewhat close proximity to where a large group of people are ordering goods from, physical goods. So yeah, what happens? Is it kind of like, the warehouse is going to start popping up by the airports because those are usually on the outskirts of town as well. What's going to look like? And it doesn't sound very exciting. Are they going to have? I don't know. It makes sense, right? Because more and more goods are being ordered, and we think of it as like, ooh, it's all online shopping. But the stuff does have to live somewhere.
Yeah, I think we're. It's kind of hard to predict. Tim, do you have any guesses?
I'm concerned by this trend because these warehouses are usually staffed by robots, and that means we're going to need more robots, and that's just going to really accelerate their overthrowing human civilization. So, I think we should all be very concerned about this.
Very valid concern, as that we deal with that every day. I mean, there are certain items that you just can't replicate online. If you look online and you have all these virtual experiences, you can even have these things where you can have your body type in a website and you can try on clothes virtually. There's certain things you just can't do online. So I think as long as that's a situation or you want to try something out with your hands, you're going to have these stores. And like in the United States, as Amazon is getting closer and closer to being in every state where they have to pay taxes or there'll be a federal tax on them, it makes sense to have these showrooms that make they're complementary to the online offerings, kind of like the Apple stores, the Samsung stores, all these things out there. So it just seems like we're going to get a new style of store where this is the showcase area, but there's always more stuff in the warehouse or online.
Yeah, I think we'll see an interesting development. I used to think that retail outlets would start to be replaced by online outlets. And now I think I've modified my opinion on that. And we'll see sort of your click and collect locations replace the main street, your high street shops. That we'll see a little bit of showrooms where you can come and pick up stuff and play with it and then order it. If you want, and fewer of these sort of mega stores like Best Buy, Barnes & Noble, where they try to stock everything in there. But I don't think anybody really has a great idea of how this would totally end up. But I when I looked at that small warehouses near cities for same-day delivery, I'm like, well, that could also be your showroom, your front end, and your Main Street shop. And I think we'll see a lot more boutiques from individual brands like the Apple Store, like Sony. I think technology is sort of leading the way in that. Also, product placement leading the way. What is Iron Man 3 going to do for Alcatel, do you think, Ayaz?
I don't really know. So TCL owns Alcatel. They make phones on AT&T. And what they have now is product placement in Iron Man 3. They're going to be showing off TCL products like televisions and TCL owns Alcatel. So you're going to see the Alcatel One Touch Idle. The phone runs Android 4.1. It's 3.8 ounces. Super thin at 7.9 millimeters. It's got a 4.7-inch screen. And TCL is claiming that the partnership with Marvel's Iron Man 3 allows the Alcatel One Touch brand to connect with a broader audience, many of which may be introduced to our brand for the first time, according to the president, Nicholas Zibel. Tim, do you think product placement for somewhat of an unknown company is going to help? I mean, we've seen Nokia in the Batman series. We've seen Sony in James Bond. But will this phone make a difference in Iron Man?
I think there has to be some level of brand awareness before you can dive in like this. And I don't think that there's really that much right now for Alcatel. I think it'd be better if they started with something, you know, a little bit wider spread, some magazine and billboards and that kind of thing, to establish a little bit of brand recognition before you dive into something high profile like this. I mean, if you look back at the Nokia phone, I think the 8100 in the Matrix series, that phone was never a success here in the U.S. at all. It certainly didn't help Nokia to gain any sort of brand recognition back then. That was, you know, a big shot in the dark, and it's certainly a big expense for the company at the time. It didn't really help them at all, and I'm afraid to say I don't think that this will help Alcatel very much right now either.
So what do you make of this? Do you think that Iron Man could be a tastemaker? The big partnership with Audi, I saw a lot more Audi cars. At least maybe I noticed them more. Do you think people are going to notice TCL and Alcatel a little bit more?
Well, I mean, it's a lot of people are going to watch the movie, right? In fact, we just had our summer movie draft, and we were all arguing, you know, whether Iron Man 3 is going to be the biggest movie of the summer. It's certainly going to be one of them, if not the biggest. So it's definitely going to put Alcatel, you know, in front of a lot of potential consumers. But these are the sorts of things that I think are in general misguided. I don't think that people pay enough attention to that sort of thing. Product placement in movies is sort of annoying anyway, but I've never bought a Coca-Cola because there was some pivotal scene where everybody was sitting around, you know, the police precinct drinking Coca-Colas or anything like that. I think it is a marketing ploy. It is creative, you know, best of luck. But no, I don't think that this is the way to sell units.
Tom, you think there's any difference that it's Iron Man that they're using? It's not like a regular drama or something. Iron Man is known for gadgets. And if Iron Man's using it, why shouldn't you?
The idea here, Derek Chen sent us a great email on this past frame rate earlier this week explaining the different main groups that advertising falls into, and one of them is branding. It's not direct response. They right. don't want you to go out immediately after Iron Man 3 and buy an Alcatel phone. What Alcatel is going to get out of this is branding, and they're going to get exactly what you talked about, Ayaz. You're going to notice Audi more often. You're going to notice Alcatel. You'll think about Alcatel. Your eyes won't pass over the Alcatel phone anymore, and that has a kind of knock-on effect of having more people possibly buying Alcatel. I don't know how much Alcatel is paying for this to make it worthwhile, whether they'll sell enough in, you know, eventually down the road. But Alcatel certainly has a branding issue. So if you're going to try to solve a branding and awareness issue, this would be the way to do it.
As a nerd, I did watch a movie where everyone was using Sony Ericsson phones, and that was the most unbelievable part of the movie for me. Because I'm like, who has those phones? I'd never seen that. Everything about the movie is fantastic. But, oh, I think it was actually Amazing Spider-Man. They had Sony phones everywhere, and I was like, nobody uses those.
Yeah.
That didn't work. I think maybe Iron Man's got a chance because he's a nerd. He's got this toy. I'd like his toys.
Now, just breaking, a bunch of folks in the chat room pointing this out, Kotaku, Joystick, several other people reporting that Disney has laid off the staff of game maker LucasArts. That's the game division of George Lucas's empire. Disney now, of course, owns the Lucas projects. They've canceled all the current projects. That includes Star Wars First Assault and Star Wars 1313. And say they are going to pursue a licensing model. So it sounds like Disney was like, we just don't want to make video games. We don't understand this. There's been a lot of confusion about the direction for LucasArts over the last couple months. That's it. That's it for LucasArts. They'll take the Star Wars franchise and they'll license it out to others. So you might see Star Wars games coming from Bungie or EA or Valve or who knows who else. Those are probably not the most likely. But the point is, anybody could now strike a deal with Disney to make a Star Wars game. Tim, first glance at this, do we think that that's good for Star Wars fans? It's obviously bad for LucasArts employees.
Yeah, it's definitely bad for them. you know, I think we could see some great Star Wars games down the road from the developers, but I'm thinking more about the legacy here that's being lost. I mean, think about Grim Fandango and all those great adventure games that were made over the years. What happens to those franchises? There's a lot of great franchises that came out of LucasArts, and maybe we'll see those on more platforms now as Disney tries to kind of open things up and license things a bit more. But for me, it's a little bit sad, you know, kind of as an old-timer gamer, there's a lot of great games that came out with LucasArts, so it's sad day.
Ayaz, what do you think? And you're telling me YYZ is the first one in chat you saw pass this along. So thanks to YYZ, aka the Toronto Airport. What do you think of this?
I think that Disney. I have to double check this, but I'm pretty sure Disney has its hands in video game development, at least when it comes to. I've seen a lot of mobile Disney games, but yeah. I don't know who makes them. So I don't know if it's a Disney Interactive Group property or if it's a third party, but it could be a real great thing for a lot of game developers right now who are just saying, look, we can actually get a license to these things and make a different game. As Tim is saying, I remember seeing LucasArts. I've seen I just remember seeing that logo everywhere. When I would go into the stores, like Electronics Boutique in the mall. I'd go in and I would always see these
in
games.
Badges.
Yeah, and so it's a bit sad that way, but I think this could be very interesting for games in the long run.
All right, let's fire up the randomizer. Randomizer. This is actually the opposite of random, because we totally planned it right before the show.
Random, because we never do that.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. The randomness of not being random. You have to do it sometimes. Tim Stevens, you got a backer edition of Ooh Yeah. You were an early backer, apparently. So yours has arrived. Mine hasn't yet. And you've got to put it through its paces. Article just went up on Engadget. What'd you think?
Yeah, I think I'm backer number 230, so I did get in pretty early when it went live. So yeah, I got my console on Monday morning, which was great. Shipped from Hong Kong, made it pretty quick over the weekend, actually. I was impressed. Right now, things are pretty early. So basically, the tone of my review is to think of this as a beta release of the console with the full release to come in June 4th when it hits retail. There's a lot of problems with the controller. For example, the faceplates, they pop off really easily, and also the buttons will get stuck underneath them. So if you hit the O button hard, it'll get stuck under the faceplate and it won't pop back up again. You know, little things like that we wouldn't expect to see out of a high-quality first-party controller. And the game selection right now is very limited, too. There are some good games in there, like WizOrb and a few others. But all the games that are really worth playing have all been on some other platform already. They've all been on Android or iOS or on Steam. So if you're looking for, you know, new games, new exciting indie titles, they're not there right now, but obviously there's a lot of, you know, interest from the indie developer community, so I'm hoping that between now and the next 2 months before the retail release, things will improve on that front as well. And there's also some needs for the interface is very simple and needs some fixes there too. So it's very early at this point, I think, and really if people have backed it early and they're waiting on the consoles, I think they just need to know there's still a lot to come for this device. So right now, you know, I wouldn't really treat this as a full retail release. I think some people are going to be disappointed, but I hope that between now and June things improve and we'll be looking at more of a contender for, you know, a proper home console.
So software kind of snappy? That's what I've heard from others.
The interface is actually a little bit slow. The menus themselves are a little bit sluggish, especially considering how simple they are. But gameplay itself is quite good. I mean, it's a Tegra 3 processor, and things run about as you would expect. You know, I played Pinball Arcade in here, which ran fine, and Cannonbolt is due to stop playing as well, which ran well. The Ball is probably the best looking 3D game that's, you know, based on the Unreal Engine. It's been on the PC for a while now. That's kind of like a Portal-style first-person puzzler. But the graphics there, you know, are roughly on par with, I'd say, Quake 3. So, you know, we're not really talking next-generation gaming here by any means. But they look good enough, and yeah, I think the majority of the titles you're going to see in here are going to be much more simple 2D kind of retro-style games. And there are some fun ones there. But again, it's just the selection right now is very limited. So, you know, again, I hope over the next 2 months things will improve. But right now, it's a little bit rough around the edges.
Cool. Well, if you want to find out the full opinion, check out the article that Tim just posted at Engadget.com. Let's see what's on the calendar.
You know, during the show, if I seemed a little distracted, it's because I was playing with Video. That's something that we've talked about. It's from the team at Ardeo, and it's, you would think, sort of the video version of Ardeo, which could get people really excited because you think, wow, so you pay a subscription and you watch all the TV and movies you want? No, from everything that I can see, I've got it open here on my account. It's more like just an iTunes competitor. If I click on Django Unchained, for example, I can watch it for $15. I have no option to rent. And Video already has my credit card information because I am a Ardeo subscriber. I don't know. I'm going to have to play with it a little bit more, but it's somewhat curious that it's not a subscription model like their music portion of the company is. But anyway, that launched during the show. Also, the mobile phone is celebrating its 40th anniversary today. Yes, the first cell phone call was placed 40 years ago. Of course, you know, we've talked about it already, that tomorrow is Facebook's big Come See Our New Home on Android event. We'll be covering it live within TNT. It starts at 10 a.m. Pacific time. Also tomorrow, the HTC One pre-sales start on AT&T.
Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Got an email from George. It says, "Hey crew, I'm in line for a Model S and I've received an email today explaining the upgrade for my 40 kilowatt battery size. To explain, you can upgrade the 40 kilowatt hour to the 60 kilowatt hour now or later." From the email, it says, "Can be upgraded to the range of 60 kilowatt hour pack upon request by you or a future owner. Your current Model S order will now be automatically updated to include the software-limited 60 kilowatt-hour battery. If you would like to upgrade, you can do that later." He also says that he gets the upgrade for free. He says, "Woohoo! I can upgrade later for the above fee. I hope it's not an April Fool's joke." And he also made a personal request that Elon Musk gets him the Tesla faster.
Hear that, Elon? We know you're not listening. So
best of luck.
Somebody tell him. If you're confused by that, what he's saying is he's getting the physical battery. We covered the story the other day. But at any point in the future, he can pay the difference and unlock it. Because remember, they're locking the 60 kilowatt hours range down to that of what the 40 kilowatt hour batteries would have been if you only paid for the 40 kilowatt hour hardware.
If he upgrades now, it'll cost $10,000. If he chooses to upgrade later, it's going to cost $11,000.
So and they could probably raise that if it's much later, one would think. But people are going to hack it. I'm telling you, that's definitely going to happen, knowing the Tesla crowd. All right, that's it for this episode of Tech News Today. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. And Tim Stevens, we know you are a very busy man with your job as editor-in-chief of Engadget. So very, very appreciative when you take the time to come on and chat with you. Always good stuff, man.
Great to be here. Thanks again for having me.
And obviously your Ooh Yeah review just up on Engadget. Anything else to let people know about? Congratulations on Expand, by the way. It sounds like it went off great.
Thanks very much. Yeah, the first event in San Fran a couple weeks ago was great. We're going to be doing the next one in later this year in New York City, so look forward to that. And we will be at the San Francisco Facebook event tomorrow as well, so we'll be live blogging that. So look for some coverage on Engadget.com as well.
Excellent. We will be covering that during the show. So tune in here as well as launching that Engadget page and get the full experience. That's it for us. You can find us. What's that?
Multiple tabs.
Yeah, exactly. That's what they're for. That's what tabs are for. You can submit stories to us if you're like, hey, I would like you to cover this story. Submit it on our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. See what the other folks think. And then if you're like, huh, they didn't like my story, you can express your opinion on their stories. Don't do it in vengeance, though. Vote up the stories you like. Vote down the stories you don't want to hear about. That's technewstoday.reddit.com. You can find all of our information at our website, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, and give us a call, leave us a voicemail. Our phone number is 260-TNT-SHOW. Bonnie Cha from All Things D joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then.